What up? Welcome to another episode of the Dealer Talk Podcast. This is your host, Herb Anderson, and thank you so much for tuning in. In today's session, we're going to be having an amazing conversation. We have somebody that has a lot of experience on the digital side of the house, and I'm just very, very excited to just get some insights. So without further ado, let's get into it. The guest for today is Mr. Peter Leto. What's up, Peter? How are you, man?
Hey, Herb. I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
I'm doing awesome, man. It's so good that you're on here. I'm very, very excited for this conversation. And yeah, man, it's exciting. Dude, so I typically start things off with like a background question, and we'll get to that. But the last couple of sessions I've been doing, I've been just asking people to give me their, what are you seeing out there, man? Like, what overview? Like, you know, as you have consultative conversations, like, what are you seeing, man? How are things?
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And thank you for having me today. It's an honor to be on your podcast. That's a loaded question in terms of so many places to take it. You know, if you're asking from a business standpoint, you know, I think there's a lot of people who are cautiously optimistic, at least in talking to some of the people in the industry that I continue to interface with, you know, some of the tech companies like Google and Facebook. That I try to connect with on a weekly basis. And most importantly, you know, taking the pulse of our current customer base. I think they're starting to feel at least an uptick in the business from where we were maybe 4 weeks ago or, you know, in the middle of March. You know, I don't know if that's fully driven by obviously the stimulus packages that are happening here with people not only getting, you know, $1,200 for some families, but also tax returns coming out and just knowing that, you know, the car buying process is open in all states or most states now. But I think there's a cautiously optimistic outlook that perhaps we're through the worst of it. What this means in the future state, you know, as you can see, the government and some, you know, organizations are predicting, unfortunately, a second wave of this in the fall and so forth. And I think there's some uncertainty there. But most of our customers have been feeling like, you know, we might be going back to on the uptick right now, which is encouraging. I think we all need some sense of normalcy.
Yeah. No. And I, you know, I can tell you, you know, just from my personal situation, like my wife's going crazy, man. And, you know, it's almost worth going outside. You know what I mean? Just
well, Herb, you're in Las Vegas. I'm in Detroit. And so, as you know, cause you grew up here, I think, the climate just hasn't shifted over for us. We get a tease of the nice weather and we can get outside and try to find our sanity again. And then we're confined to the house again. So,
yeah, man. Yeah. So definitely crazy, crazy times for sure. All right, dude. So listen, man, I'm super excited to have you on. You have a very, you know, how do I say it? A great digital background, right? You were at Google, now you're Foundation Direct. You know, kick us off with them and tell us a little bit more about your experiences, what you've done and what you're currently doing.
Yeah, sounds good. I'll give you a little bit of my background. I openly admit right off the top, especially when we're talking to car dealers, I've never sold a car and I'm not going to pretend that I have. That's not my specialty. Obviously, that's what our clients do mess. But I spent my entire career in marketing. I won't belabor on it, but I began in TV ad sales with TBS and TNT cable networks, sold national ads to the domestic manufacturers here in Detroit. Unfortunately, recession hit and in 2008, thought I might lose my job, heard of a company called Google, used it as a consumer, but couldn't even tell you how they made money. And was fortunate enough to land a job there in Chicago due to the economy here in Detroit. Spent some time there in the sales division, working with B2B markets. The reason I share that is we worked with large manufacturers like 3M who were trying to sell Post-it notes to Target and Walmarts and how do you co-op and so forth and so on. And that's where I was sort of introduced to this co-op marketing concept. And it came in handy in the automotive arena because in 2011, Google Detroit was hiring. That's where their automotive hub was. And they were looking for somebody who was interested in learning the dealer space and activating dealers against digital and specifically against Google Media. Candidly, looking back on it, I think Google and I would agree I was not qualified for the role with my background. But Google was, you know, growing fast at the time and just looking for people who are hungry. And I got a great opportunity in 2011 to just attack the dealer business, understand what the dealers needed, what they were doing today, and how we, Google, could help better. And I was very fortunate from 2011 till about 2018 to oversee Google's automotive retail team. Spent the last year of my career at Google on the GM business solely. But I really enjoyed the time in retail, and I was itching to get back into it.
Yeah. So that's obviously, like I said, when I talked about your background, like that's a big one for me, just obviously because of just, who they are. But 12 total years there, 9 of those in automotive. Biggest lesson, biggest takeaway from that experience, as it relates to the automotive industry.
Yeah. When you say takeaway from the experience, what I learned on the dealer side or what I learned from Google or both?
Yeah, both, kind of how they kind of mesh those two, right? Obviously, Google as a platform and what it does, but tying that to the automotive industry.
Yeah, I think, keep me on track here, but I think I'll try to talk about it in a couple ways. I am very grateful to Google. I'm still a big Google fan to this day. I have a lot of good friends that work there and love the company. I had an opportunity in front of me that most wouldn't get in a lifetime, candidly, and I feel very grateful for that. Learned a lot about business and how Google thinks about things and how that translates to other people's business. So maybe what I can do is share a couple of the learnings off the top of my head that I would say to answer your question, and then relate them not only to what Google taught me, but what that means in the dealer world. And I think that might best get at your question, but feel free to keep me honest here.
Well,
the first thing I think I learned at Google was they have an unwavering focus at putting the customer first. And I know it sounds silly and maybe cliche, but every situation, every business case they bring up, all throughout my almost 12 years at the company, we always had to lead with, what is this solving for the customer? How is this in the customer's best interest? How does this make the customer's life better, easier? Is this better than what's out there today, and why? I took it for granted after a while, because when I first started, I thought, wow, this is pretty great. Most of the other companies I've associated with, some of my clients, some of the companies I've worked for, were always talking about the revenue it would drive them, the impact it would have them, and the customer benefit was almost secondary. That was never the case with Google. In fact, there were many occasions where, candidly, I lost my way, or some of our teams lost our way, and would propose an idea that was very lucrative. It might have been in the best interest of a client. It might have been in the best interest of Google from a financial standpoint. But unless it was in the best interest of the customer, they never moved forward in that way. And as you asked me the question, I think that was my biggest lesson, is as long as you put the customer first, all else will follow. I think if you're asking me to translate that, if I heard you correctly, to the dealer world or to our business, I mean, I don't know if there's a better time than now that's kind of bringing this exact comment to the forefront. I don't know how you feel, Herb, but I say this cautiously. I'm not trying to pick on anybody, but it really took a pandemic to get our dealerships to deliver on what a customer, a user, if you will, has asked for all along. This concept of digital retailing is so hot in the industry right now. Everyone's talking about it. A lot of dealers, and congratulations, were prepared for this, but some weren't. And I think that's a perfect example. If we're putting our customers first, time and time again, for years, I sat on stage for Google, represented the company, and continued to say, unfortunately, customers don't want to go into the dealership. They want to be able to transact online in the same way they can do other things in their life. They want to experience the car via the comfort of their home, similar to how you and I are talking, as if you're a sales rep and I'm a customer. But not a lot of people evolve quick enough to that. And so I guess if I were translating what I learned from Google, one of them is put the customer first. And I think now we're starting to see dealerships are being forced to do that. Some are embracing it really well. Some are really well prepared. And some are trying to figure it out as we speak. So that would be one lesson.
Yeah, no, I love what you said there about the customer experience and how it took the pandemic for dealers to, and I don't want to say wake up, because I don't want to generalize. A lot of dealers were already looking at this, but yeah, man, it wasn't a fully embraced, let's put it that way, within the industry. And now everybody is obviously going in that direction. My concern with that right now, just in the state of things, is that we're doing it in a haste, and that's going to open us up for mistakes. And I feel like right now more than ever, we can't afford as a dealership, as an industry, to give a customer a subpar experience, because the tolerance for that is really, really low. You know what I mean? And so, and when you do things like that, where it's like, oh, you know, it's almost at a panic state. It's just very easy for, there's a lot of room for error there. So I guess a question, just based on your background and what you're doing now and in your consultative conversations, and I don't know if this really ties into it directly, but how would you envision that dealers that haven't adopted that and are doing it now in the midst of all of this, do it in the most effective way possible? Granted, it's not going to be perfect and there are learning curves and experiences, but what would you say, I don't know, maybe a tip or something that you've seen dealers do that's successful when it comes to implementing digital retailing or modern retailing, what we're calling it now?
Yeah, it's a really fair question, and I appreciate the caveat you placed. I'm not going to pretend I'm an expert in digital retailing. You want to talk marketing, you want to talk advertising, that's honestly where my strengths lie. But, you know, I think there's a little bit of an acceptance right now where a lot of consumers are understanding that maybe technology and this, just put aside digital retailing, the use of technology in businesses, the ability to transact or interact via virtually versus in person is arguably something a lot of, you know, with the current situation, a lot of different industries are going through. You know, as an example right now, we're dealing this with our oldest daughter. She's only a toddler, but her school is trying to figure out how to do some sort of instruction virtually right now. And the reason I bring that up is because I do think there's a lot of customers who are saying, yeah, you haven't been meeting my expectations. But you know what? Now this pandemic's causing us all to figure out how to do things differently. And there's actually a margin for forgiveness or for let's try to figure this out or test this out. It doesn't have to be perfect today, but what's work together? I think some of that spirit of working together is just the times, you know, in the grand scheme of things. You know, where what really matters has been put into perspective for a lot of us. So there's just a general acceptance there. But the other side of it is, you know, there's so many people who are kind of now struggling with how to succeed in this virtual world that there's almost this acceptance that I've seen of, well, let's figure this out together, or I'm going to grant you more patience than what I would have before as just a customer who expects this. Perhaps I'm wrong there. This is obviously opinion. I usually like to lead with data, but this is more of an opinion base. But I would say to any dealer, just test, you know, figure out who you believe in, what platform that you align to, what vendor or partner you think is doing it right, and test. And don't be afraid to make some mistakes, but try. And I think right now trying is the best thing that you can do. Due to that kind of margin of error that people are allowing right now, is all this is new to a lot of people, and therefore we're accepting it that way.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think, you know, just to add, I would say it's new for dealers and for consumers. Yes, mm-hmm. The consumers have wanted that experience, or you know, I guess there's a lot of indication that that's where consumers are headed, but it's new for them because the majority of people have always bought the car the way that they bought the car, right? In person, the test drive, the 4 or 5 hours in the showroom, like that's been their, you know what I mean?
So. Yeah. And I'm hopeful though that this is a good lesson for everybody. I think, you know, there's downsides to technology, of course, and I'm not suggesting technology will replace the entire car shopping process. But I think there's a lot more we can do with technology as a result than what we're doing today. And we're seeing it. We're seeing some of the savviest dealers right now out there who said, I've been preparing for this moment. We have a couple of them within our portfolio who are really savvy, you know, dealerships leading the way. And, you know, they're increasing, you know, their ability to deliver virtually, to, you know, to pick up and service vehicles and to never have anyone step in, and honestly are selling as many cars as they have in the past, or maybe down slightly. So it's just interesting because I think the more we embrace technology, the more options it provides us. Again, doesn't mean it replaces everything, to your point, but I think it just gives us more flexibility, you know, to continue our business as normal.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's spot on, man. All right, so let's kind of move things along here. You mentioned data, so let's get into the data. So one of the things what I do professionally for dealers is I have a vendor management company, and what we do, we don't sell anything. We inspect the dealer's digital data. We compile it all together in comprehensive reports that paint the full picture, right? Right now, in the situation that we're in, how critically important is it for us to be paying attention to the data, to really put it together, make sense of it, utilize it in order to make the next best decision, right? Because what I'm seeing a lot of right now, which has me concerned, is we're shutting everything off. Nothing's working right now. Like, everybody's, you know, all the vendors go away. You know what I mean? And I don't necessarily think that that's I think there's a lot of danger in that. You know what I mean? So yeah. What is your guys' take on that when, as it refers to the data?
Yeah, it's a great question, Herb. Candidly, before I joined Google, I was never a data person. I was the person who wanted to make decisions based on gut and instinct. And that was the opposite of Google. And I fought it for a while. And there are countless examples where what I thought and what the data showed were two different things. And, you know, when you followed the data, you usually were in the right place. I always laugh because Eric Schmidt, who was the former CEO of Google and then a chairman, said, in God we trust, everyone else bring data. And that's what we live by today. You brought a lot of good points up. I want to kind of unpack all of them, if you don't mind, but bear with me or keep me accountable, because there's a couple of things to touch on. You know, you mentioned people are turning things off. You mentioned, this isn't even working. What are you measuring? And I would argue, especially in our environment today with COVID, the ways you used to measure or how you maybe were measuring your media before need to be re-examined right now. And how have you pivoted your measurements right now? As an example, a company like Google will talk about dealers, you know, tracking things like store visits. How many people saw my ad? How many people got to my physical dealership as a result of clicking on my ad? Well, guess what is happening to store visits right now? Not many people are going to the store. If you're optimizing to that, if that's what your campaigns are trying to get, and we have people under lockdown, well, guess what your media is going to show? That it's not working. Mm-hmm. So I guess where I would start with is, as this pandemic has occurred, if we're talking about this moment, my first piece of feedback is, what are you currently measuring, and how have you altered your measurement or what you're telling your system, your partner, your vendors to measure? Because we can't probably measure the same things, pre-March or pre-COVID that we're measuring today. But put that aside, I think if you want to just take a look at this from a bigger picture, I've always had a pleasure of speaking with Bob Lanham at Facebook. I think you know Bob well, Herb. He oversees the retail division there. We were adversaries in a playful way when I was at Google and he was at Facebook. Now we spend a lot of time together, and now that I'm not at Google as well, and I've learned a lot from him. I think the challenge with marketing today is we're not taking a step back as an industry, partners and vendors, and even the dealers, to really evaluate our media with a common denominator. And what I mean by that is, I don't think we're taking the time to sit back and say, if I look at what I'm doing today across my holistic media strategy, traditional and digital, pull it all together, how much money am I spending? How many vehicles am I selling? And what is my overarching cost per vehicle sold? And I would be looking at my entire marketing plan in that realm to get an understanding that with what I'm doing today, here's where my dollars are going. And overall, I'm spending $700 in marketing for every one vehicle I sell. Mm-hmm. And I would be calculating my ROI on that. I would then be segmenting every platform that I'm spending on, my local TV buy, my billboards, my radio buys, my newspaper buys, my third-party leads, you know, AutoTrader, KBB, my Google SEM, my Facebook ads, so forth. And I would be looking at each of those platforms as well and trying to see, okay, if I just look at the dollars I'm spending within those platforms, what is my cost per sale? And that will give me a better understanding that, well, maybe I'm spending $700 overall. Some of these platforms are $1,000 per vehicle, while others are only $200. And if I have that view, I would start to ask myself, if I were to take some money away from the platforms that are larger cost per sales and put it towards the platforms that are more efficient cost per sale, could I still get the same results in total vehicles sold? In other words, if I do that, I'll either become more efficient in a cost per vehicle sold, or perhaps what if I sell more cars for less money? That would be, you know, the holy grail. Right. But how do I figure that out? And candidly, what I've been surprised by, Herb, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are here as well. When I've had the pleasure of sitting down with dealers, they've shown me their financials. They show me that inventory and, you know, people in terms of staff and employment and so forth and marketing are usually their top three expenses. They can tell you all day long, down to a penny, what's happening on inventory, what's happening on their staffing, and even floor plans that I should mention in there too. But when you get into marketing, I'm often surprised that the conversation really stops at a surface level. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge opportunity. If it's such a high price point for the dealership, why aren't we focusing more on what our marketing is delivering overall? And how do we find out what a common denominator is there to understand where we can get more effective and efficient? And to me, it's more about an approach like that, measuring against yourself month over month, quarter over quarter, than it is, you know, okay, I'll measure a cost per click here, I'll measure a view here, et cetera. Because it all works together. I mean, you wrote a really nice article back in the fall on Omnichannel talking about how, you know, it's not one platform or the other, it's how it works together. But I don't know that enough people and enough partners out there are helping dealers understand that picture. So I'll stop there and see what you think of that answer.
Yeah, no, great, man. This is for me. One of my biggest pet peeves, if you will, is that I will go into a dealership and I'll talk to either the GM or the marketing director, whoever I'm sitting across from. And in my first discovery conversations, one of my first questions is, how many people have gone to your website last month? And what's that traffic equate to in sales? How many cars did you sell? And 99% of the time is, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it just blows my mind, because if you are measuring that in relationship to vehicle sale, then all you need to do is increase traffic. You're going to sell more cars. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So at the most basic form, if you don't know anything else, right?
Yeah.
I don't get that part. It's like, it's something so simple that you should, like you said, like, you know, your floor plan, you know, your inventory, you know, all these things. And that should be one of the things that just comes to you naturally, something that you're measuring. But then it goes back to, I mean, look at Google Analytics, right? Most of the time you go in there and they're talking about the activity and they want to see if they're up or out. And then you go to the gold and there's no goal set up.
Yeah.
So what are we measuring here? And so if we don't know what we're measuring, if we don't know what that end goal or that end objective is, and it's impossible, man. Or now we're just guessing. You know what I mean?
We've had the pleasure at our time at Google and now at Foundation Direct, you know, consulting a lot of dealers via 20 groups, you know, via podcasts like this and others. And, you know, I would say two things I'm observing to piggyback off of exactly what you said. I agree with everything you just said. Number one, I think the challenge with marketing today is it's still seen as a cost center, not a profit center. And, this was a tough one for us, because I get it. You know, there's I'm forgetting who said the quote. It was a former agency well-known agency executive who said, you know, I know my marketing is working, or half my marketing is working. I just don't know which half. I'm butchering the quote. I'm butchering who said it, but you get the idea. And that was true for so long. I mean, we just didn't know. And obviously digital came around, and I won't go through the whole story, but we have a better understanding now to exactly what you said. You know, the showroom is actually the website. That's the first place they get to. And then if they're interested, they'll come to the actual physical showroom. But the real showroom is the virtual showroom, the website. And so now the ability with the digital provides, and being able to understand and track and measure and how many people got here and what they did and so forth and so on. I think the most savvy dealerships are realizing marketing isn't just a cost center anymore. It's a profit center. If I take care of these customers the right way, thanks to the way I can connect my, you know, CRM system back to advertising, thanks to my way for understanding that the propensity of people who get to my website and what percent of those people will convert to sale and so forth, I can understand how to be much more efficient and more effective. And I don't actually need to be everywhere anymore. I can be in the places that matter. And I can get just as good results as I'm getting now for less money, or better results if maybe I invest a little bit more or a little differently. But I think that's the challenge the entire industry faces. Marketing needs to be seen as a profit center if you do it the right way. How can I generate more business for myself? I can spend $400 per vehicle, but it yields me this profit. How do I keep getting that and make sure I'm maximizing that? I think we need to change the script of the role that marketing actually plays. So that would be part one, I would say. And then part two, I would say, is I continue to push any dealership I speak to say, look, you got to have somebody, Mr. or Mrs. Dealer Principal, Mr. or Mrs. General Manager, you got a lot on your plate. I get it. If this marketing thing's confusing to you, hire somebody, have them in-house, and ensure that they are looking after this for you. Because between the analytics and between the marketing and just keeping your partners, your vendors accountable, I'm not saying they're not doing a good job, but they need support from you. What's your strategy? What are you seeing? What are your sales looking like? It's a two-way street. And I think the dealerships who've really been successful are hiring somebody that they're putting in who knows marketing. I'm not just talking about, you know, respectfully the niece or nephew or, you know, the next door neighbor who's, you know, understands how to build a website. I'm talking about someone who really understands marketing, to really be an advocate there and work with the partners to not only spot check and be a system of checks and balances, but also, you know, share strategies back so these partners out there can be more effective with the advertising. And I think that is a huge miss. How do we make marketing into a profit center, and why aren't we hiring somebody who's, you know, being the digital quarterback at our dealership?
No, I love that. I've you know, that's why I started the vendor management solutions deal, because it doesn't exist in the dealership. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's looking at the data. No, you know what I mean? There's a lot of confusion. Yeah. And then the other thing that and this is not a dig at dealerships. As a matter of fact, this is a compliment. Like, you know, we talk about how non-progressive we are in certain things within the industry, but I think that dealers are very, what's the word I'm looking for? They're new adaptive to technology. You know what I mean? They like to see it. They'll sit down with the vendors. They'll go through the presentations. They'll spend money to put these things either on their websites or digitally. You know what I mean? Like, they'll commit with their wallets.
Yeah.
But then nobody's there to implement it.
Yeah.
And check it and make sure that it's set. You know, that's where it all falls apart. So no, man, I totally agree with you, man.
Yeah. And I just think there's a huge opportunity here. I mean, data is driving. Again, you have to. If you're looking at the data and you believe in the data, I mean, it will tell you such rich things about your business. And I just have seen the dealers who adopt a strategy of thinking about it as a profit center and hiring someone who really knows how to interpret that, how to add value. It's changed their life. I mean, it's literally changed their life. Most of our customers today are people who have done those two things that I'm talking about. No credit to us. They've done those themselves. This isn't a pitch of our company. And they're seeing the results. I mean, they're finding themselves spending less money in advertising, getting similar results or better results based on some of the places they're placing the media and the decisions they're making. And I can't preach that enough, honestly.
Yeah. No, for sure. So I think this is a good segue, and it's not really a segue because it kind of ties into what we were talking about. But you and I had this conversation when we were, when we were introducing ourselves and just talking to each other, and it's kind of stuck with me since that conversation. I've been really pondering that, and we talked about how we're overcomplicating things. Like, and you said something very powerful. You said in the beginning, especially, right, of digital marketing, all these things. You know, it was not cumbersome, but it was intricate and all these things. But now, as it's, you know, as it's evolved and kind of set in and synced in, not so much. And you know what I mean? Can we kind of elaborate that? Because there's a really good point in there. I think I totally agree. I think that we are overcomplicating things, and we're missing out because of that.
Yeah, I mean, I really feel for the dealers today because, you know, depending on who they follow from, you know, just to get their information, who was the speaker at the OEM roadshow they had to go to, who was on stage at this event or that event, they're told so many different things. And like anything, a news source or a vendor speaking or anyone listening right now, you have to evaluate the speaker and their intentions and what they're their prerogative is or their message. But as I shared with you, when I first entered the space in 2011, I felt for the dealers. Marketing was really complicated. You had traditional media outlets that were still highly relevant, everything from billboards to newspapers to radio, print, you know, television, et cetera. You had to be there. And then there was all these digital platforms. And you know, those of you who know media better, you see these Lumascapes where it's one slide. It's showing you pictures of literally hundreds of relevant websites that you want to be on in automotive and all this stuff. And you're sitting there as a dealer and you're going, well, wait a minute. I only have so much money to spend in advertising. And to your point, they're not frugal. They're already spending a lot of money. They're doing, you know, they're taking this seriously. But you sit there and go, well, how do I spend this money across all these platforms? I used to just be in this traditional arena. Now I got this digital arena trying to combine the two. And where do we go? And that's candidly where a lot of the frustration was lying when I first started, where dealers were asking us this question, the regional ad associations, the OEMs, how do we coordinate, who does what, when, how, and so forth. And I'm happy to talk more about that as well. But to get back to your question, as time evolved, I just started to see that marketing has actually become a lot more simple. It's become more simple because there's a few major platforms out there today who literally reach everybody across all of their platforms. And I'm just talking about Google and their suite of services and Facebook and their suite of services. Both of those companies have 5, 6, 7, 8 platforms that reach billions of customers across any device. Understand exactly where those people go, whether they go, they're on Facebook and they leave and they go to another site, or you're on Google and you go over to YouTube and then you go to Google Maps and so forth. They can follow these customers anywhere across devices. They've now given, you know, automotive best practices, which is something they didn't have back in 2011. So they know the audience. They know exactly, here's the best practices you need to implement.
They give you the blueprint, man. They give you it right there.
What'd you say they heard?
They give you the blueprints, you know, like the Facebook, what is it, playbook, and then yeah. You know, Google has their automotive guidelines.
They both do a good job. I mean, they're literally giving you the answers to the test. It's that simple. So here's the answers to the test. Here's all the people. We've given you these lists of people to go after. We know they're in market. We, you know, you can upload your CRM to us, and we'll target those customers, etc. And the thing that was missing in 11 that also that now here today is automation. That's a big buzzword in the industry. So if you don't mind, I might just define what I mean by that for anyone who's not as familiar. But we in 2011 required, there was no scaled processes. To make one change, a human would go into a system and make a change and then go out. Well, okay, one human across 4,000 dealer accounts, That takes a lot of time. It's really hard to do those types of things.
Sure.
The machines do that now. And so the ability to automate and literally go to a system and say, I want to drive as many people to store visits as I possibly can. That is my goal. Just tell the system that. I want to drive phone calls. That's my goal. Tell the system that. On the back end, the system does all of the things possible, knowing everything it knows about a customer to ensure your ad goes to the people who have the highest likelihood to call your dealership. And that's what it optimizes to. And so you've eliminated so much of the manual work. And we had a theory about 2016 at Google that said, okay, what if we worked with a dealer and showed that they could cut off all their other advertising with the exception of Google's properties and see if they could still get the same results or better results as what they're getting today. And candidly, we partnered with a dealer on this process, and then we ended up expanding it to a few other dealers and found, if I'm being fully transparent, that between Google and Facebook, and to a lesser degree Bing because of just how many people they reach in comparison,
sure,
you could accomplish your goal. Google alone, you were pretty close, and Facebook alone, you did well as well. But the power of Google and Facebook together was your best bet. And what we were able to show a lot of dealers is that Lumascape example, the slide that had hundreds of auto partners that you need to place your ads on. All you're doing is hitting the same customer that a Google and Facebook can hit. But the difference is if you do it in one ecosystem, a Google ecosystem or a Facebook ecosystem, you can understand what message you already showed that customer and then change that message the next time and continue a conversation. When you're spreading your advertising across all these other hundreds of channels, you're essentially starting from ground zero all the time with the same customer. They're on a Google, they're on Google search and they see one message from you. And then you go to another property, a third party auto property, whatever that is, you name it. And it's almost like starting the conversation over again. And they're like, oh, hi, are you interested in a Silverado? Yeah, I've already told you that. I already know that over here. Google and Facebook know that. And so they can take that conversation and go, oh, this customer already looked at a Silverado. Let's take the next step with them. And I think there's so much more efficiency there. There's so much more relevancy. And that's why, when we're at Google and now at Foundation, we're seeing the customers who start to understand this better are just seeing better performance. Relevancy is helping to drive better results, higher view rates, higher click-through rates, lower costs. It's a win for the customer. It's a better experience. And it's a win for the dealers, obviously, as a result. So I said a lot there. I'm sorry.
That's awesome, man. I actually want to talk more about that, because that's one of the main reasons why I wanted to put this session together. If you can recall when we first talked, it was like, dude, I cannot tell you how much success I'm seeing with just Google, YouTube, and Facebook and cutting everything else out. Just that. Just focus on SEO, SEM, video, YouTube for video, and then my inventory displayed on Facebook and driving customers to the website and not having anything else. And so you said a couple of things that I wanted to, dig in there. But one thing right now that's fresh in my mind is, as you were talking, dude, I thought about attribution, man. Think about it. We have all these different platforms, and that's a conversation that I have with dealers all the time. I just had this conversation yesterday where one of my clients is like, dude, I just need to know where these customers are coming from. Dude, if you have 50 different places or 50 different partnerships and all the, it's impossible. You'll never have attribution, right? I mean, do you agree? Does that make it harder to measure?
It does. And again, yes, I mean, 100% with you. And I want to go in four directions right now. focus. I got to stay focused. But yes, I think everything starts with measurement. And it's not sexy, right? You know, you want to use a football term. It's, you know, it's drafting a lineman. You know, it's not, you're not getting your flashy quarterbacks or receivers or anything like that. But it's the necessary blocking and tackling, because otherwise you just don't know. And, when I was at Google, we worked a lot with the OEMs on media mix modeling. These are really extensive systems and processes where it's looking at, here's your current media mix. Here's what this drove. What if we change this in your mix or that in your mix? And those types of attribution models are really effective. But they're really expensive today. And so from a dealer standpoint, they're not necessarily ready on the dealer level, if you will. It's just such a cost to take on at that level. But that's where I'm suggesting a couple things. Like, first of all, holistic marketing strategy. And again, I credit Bob Lanham for this, because it's something he's taught me over the years. But just back up. Just place one common denominator. It's easy for you to do today. Well, just calculate all the media dollars you're spending to a cost per vehicle sold and benchmark against yourself. Just start there.
Yeah.
Like, that's one way of looking at just understanding how your whole media mix is impacting sales. But then to your point, let's take the digital ones, because you can't measure a TV ad the same way you're measuring a search engine marketing ad, SEM ad, right? One, you're measuring a click and what they did after a click. You can't measure a click on a TV ad. Mm-hmm. So look at your digital bucket and segment what is more of an awareness play like television. This is where YouTube videos and some of the Facebook elements come in. They have some of the upper funnel actions. And then there's obviously the lower funnel actions where, you know, SEM is a cost per click. And a lot of the remarketing efforts that Facebook and Google provide in terms of, you know, aligning your CRMs and uploading your customer data, those are more lead gen. Separate those two buckets and ensure that you're measuring both of those equally. Meaning, when I say equally, the same types of conversions. I don't know about you. It sounds like we're having a similar experience, but a lot of the clients we first work with, when we're taking over an account or consulting on their accounts, we notice there's no continuity between how they're measuring lead gen across different platforms. Mm-hmm. We're measuring phone calls over here, but over here, we're actually not measuring anything. Or over here, we're measuring, you know, a lead form, but over here, we're not. Well, how are you comparing what's better for you? What's more effective? And I think, again, it gets back to what you said. If you want on your digital side to go into Google Analytics and put in those goal conversions and hold them all accountable, that's great. That's what you should be. Be careful. A video ad on YouTube is not, shouldn't, in my mind, be measured the exact same way as a search engine marketing ad on Google.
Sure.
Because the audience is a little different, so you have to kind of alter what you're measuring there. But there are things that are like to like in terms of lead gen, and that's where I think dealers aren't as comfortable. If they need help, there's plenty of people out there who can help them set this up better. Yes, it's an additional cost, but it's better than doing nothing, I think, to work through a partner and maybe learn from that partner.
Yeah, there's just a lot of guessing in the industry, man, when it comes to marketing. That's just, there's no other way to say it. You know what I mean? Something so simple that you said right now, which is this is what I do, man. It's an Excel spreadsheet. It's not rocket science. It's an Excel spreadsheet. All the different partners or providers stacked one on top of the other. So that when you're looking at the report, you can cross check everything and see how they're performing against each other.
And Herb, this gets back to my comment on the digital quarterback, and I love your thoughts here. But my challenge is when I've been given these reports from a lot of dealerships, both in my Google days and at Foundation Direct, we see line items for advertising, but they're vague. And we don't know exactly what that entails. And when trying to unpack that, it's very hard. If we're lucky, we get connected with a vendor who we're now asking a question of, okay, well, what does your gold advertising package exactly mean? And what are you doing? And can we get access to the account and so forth and so on? And those are usually met with resistance for reasons we can all speculate on or discuss. And it's really hard to like go down a deeper level for us, and the dealers often are uncertain themselves. I can tell you that when we worked with the digital quarterback at a dealership, we've gotten a lot further. We've helped to coach them along. I'm sure you've done the same. Mm-hmm. And we've ended up getting to exactly what's unpacked in each of these areas and how much of that's going to Google versus Facebook versus, you know, whoever else you're spending the money, Pandora, so forth. But it's not always really, really visible. And I can tell you from my time at Google, we would work with a lot of agencies, and behind the scenes, we would see, you know, a $10,000 media spend being split across, you know, 30 different platforms, all just in a package. And it just, it candidly frustrated with us because we saw a lot of overlap and waste. And there are oftentimes we'd look at a dealership and go, okay, do you know you've actually hired two different vendors who are buying literally the same thing?
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it's not the vendor's fault, to be clear, because they don't know what you're buying. Like the vendors, oh, I'm going to do this. And, you know, it might not be the vendor's fault. Let me say that.
It's the bundle. We're bundling.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where we are. But I don't know what your thoughts are there, but I agree with you. I think the measurement piece is where it starts. And, I think it's an area that might not be as comfortable for most dealers, but it's something to be willing to invest in and learn and maybe leverage a partner like yourself on to begin with. And then maybe down the road they do it themselves or maybe they continue to need support. But it's definitely what I would prioritize if I were in their shoes.
Yeah, man. So, dude, I feel like, forget the podcast. I feel like we could keep talking here for 2 or 3 hours, man. I'm having a lot of fun, dude, just having this conversation. I wanted to give you some time to talk about Foundation Direct. We're going to do that here in a minute, but I wanted to close things off with, there's a last question that I'll ask, but I wanted to kind of bring things together in the form of advice, you know? Like your advice for dealers, obviously in the current situation and all that, but maybe with the added, I don't want to say focus, but including social media in the mix, right? Yeah. Everything that's going on right now, dude, I can't tell you how impactful social media has been. I can't tell you just before this happened, how I've noticed, how I'm using social media to take control back for the dealers as far as their inventory, right? To take their inventory back and drive customers to their website by using Facebook, Instagram. And so with everything going on, social media, how critically important, you know, give us some thoughts on that.
Critical. I think when you and I first spoke, I said, well, let's define what social media means, right? You know, I think you hear social media and you think Facebook, and you should. It's the, gorilla in the room and that way. And then there's other things too. does YouTube belong in that category? It's very social and viral in terms of sharing videos and commenting and so forth and so on. And so I would just argue, you know the stats right now. You know your own behavior. I mean, watch time across all these platforms is up dramatically. Mm-hmm. I think the challenge that I've seen historically as it relates to Facebook and platforms like YouTube have been, you know, hey, this is something my the younger generations do. That's actually not the case. I mean, I knew that working at Google and being, Google owns YouTube, so we sold YouTube as well. I mean, you're not seeing just the younger generations doing it. In fact, the fastest growing areas are oftentimes in the older generations who are older to adapt. And we know the car buying age on average is, 52 years or whatever. Facebook right now is blowing up. Their watch time is incredible. I don't know about you, Herb, but that is the only place I actually consume news. Mm-hmm. I make sure I'm checking my sources, of course, but that's where I go. I mean, it's relevant because the people you trust are sharing things, the news outlets are sharing things, the ability to interact easily on the platform with Messenger is fantastic. They continue to build out their local business pages. You now have the ability even on those pages to pin a message at the top. Right. The most sophisticated dealers are doing that right now, talking about what they're doing from COVID perspective. You know, you can video conference like we are right now through the Messenger platform. You know, Google offers obviously their Google Meet or Hangout platform. But yes, I mean, the right now everyone's confined to their homes, and where are they? They're on platforms like Facebook and YouTube. On the Facebook front, you know, I was talking to Bob, and I was just in the limited audits that I've seen in my time outside of the Google walls. I think people are really underspending in that arena. Rightfully, partners, vendors, agencies, whatever term you want to use there, are always pushing dealers to do the most accountable thing. In other words, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Dealer, you know all of the email addresses you have in your CRM? Upload those email addresses to Facebook's platform and send messages to all those customers who are coming off a lease. I mean, that makes complete sense. It's a perfect solution. And a lot of dealers will do that. But obviously, as you're limiting the number of people you're targeting, you know, it's a smaller overall opportunity, right? You might only have to spend $1,000 to do that. Unfortunately, I see a lot of dealers stop there when it comes to platforms like Facebook. They focus on the lowest hanging fruit and they stop there. I would love to see them open up and expand a little bit more and look at platforms like Facebook and YouTube is equivalent to television or any other brand medium where they can get their message out to the masses. If they start to focus on platforms like that in that manner, I think they're going to start to see that not only can these platforms deliver on a direct response realm, but they can also deliver on a broader spectrum of continuing to fill the funnel as time goes on. So that as shoppers are in market for 90 days, at least that's what Google used to say, people will buy within the 90-day window. If you're kind of broadcasting to your DMA and using Facebook and YouTube as the same way you would buy a local TV spot, get a general message out there, continue to drive awareness in the marketplace, you'll see the impacts of that funneling down and continuing to fill your funnel as you move further. But a lot of dealers aren't doing that today. They think they're doing Facebook or they think they're doing YouTube, but they're focused on the very low-hanging fruit and not looking at the impact it could have above. So is social media important? 100%, especially in these times. Where are they focused right now? On the lowest-hanging fruit, which is good, but there's much more opportunity both within that bucket and going beyond that bucket to really own your marketplace and build your brand. And the latter part of building your brand through those platforms just isn't happening today, in my opinion.
No, dude, man. Listen, automotive community, industry, the people I listen to the podcast and follow my content. Like, it's not just me that's saying this stuff, man. It's important. It makes sense. Dude, at its basic form, marketing is all about, or should be anyway, the most frequency for the least amount of spend. How can I get my message out there in front of a bunch of people repetitively the cheapest way possible? To me, there's just no better way than I see Facebook and Instagram and YouTube like people might have seen the transition from radio to TV.
Yeah.
There's just no difference to me. It's the same thing. We're just really late to look at it that way. You know what I mean? And so, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's the biggest untapped opportunity right now. And candidly, there's no better time to get into it because there's a lot of people who are pulling back. My business partner, one of our founders, Andrew Diffendurfer, says right now it's a slingshot. Everyone's pulling back. But, you know, when you let go, it's going to be wild. And what are you doing right now to set up for that?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of recommendations I would have for you there. But one of them is how are you looking at these platforms? They're underutilized. And right now they're cheap because a lot of people are pulling back from it. And you can get in there and test it right now and really start to get ahead of it and understand, you know, the value it can provide you. And I know times are tough for a lot of dealers right now. I'm not trying to minimize that, but if you are open and you're thinking like I need to be investing right now because of what's going to happen and when we fully recover, these are great areas to just tackle and test right now.
Yeah, no, and I wanted to mention this too because I've had this conversation with Bob, and I definitely wanted to make sure to make a reference on. You talked about the spend. Like, why do we expect to spend $500 on Facebook? And if we don't get, you know, 50 car deals from it, it's ineffective. Yet we'll spend, you know, $7,000 on a third party site that gives us no leads. And all they're showing us is, oh, so there, people are clicking on your car on my platform. You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand the
yeah. I also struggle with it. And, you know, I think, you know, we've seen the results. I mean, you know, I think naysayers who might listen to this podcast might say, okay, Peter, the company you work for now only activates against Google properties, Facebook properties, and Bing to a lesser degree. And so they'll say, oh, you're selling them because that's what your company does. Okay, fair. But my company does that. Our company does that for a reason. I mean, those are the platforms that work. And if other platforms work better, we'll pivot. We're not tied to Google or Facebook or whatever. We're a business who wants to help dealers succeed. But right now we're focused on the areas that are bringing the best value. And to exactly your point, Herb, how do we become more efficient? And I love what you said. I agree with you. You know, we got to do two things, like measure your marketing overall. I won't keep going back to that point outside of this one, but look at it overall holistically and a cost per dollar sold to the spreadsheet you're talking to. And number two, where you can look at your digital lead gen and your digital kind of consideration drivers and measure those also and compare the results overall, because you might get this Facebook ad that you run today that you don't see drives leads, but you realize later that when you cut it out, it actually hurt the leads that ended up happening later, right?
Yeah, and all the other platforms you're on and things like that.
And you got to compare those two reports, yeah.
Yeah. Right on, dude. So, like I said, I could keep going here forever, but...
I'm sorry. I love to talk. Can you tell?
I wanted to talk about Foundation Direct. And I typically don't ask this question, but just because, you know, obviously the Google factor, I mean, there's no other way to say it. I wanted to kind of start it out with, you know, obviously tell us about what you guys are doing, how you help dealers, and most importantly, how the audience can connect with you guys. But why leave Google? And, you know, why Foundation Direct? Like, I just wanted to kind of share that perspective with the audience.
Yeah, it was a difficult decision to leave Google. As I mentioned, I love the place. I was very grateful for my time there. I got along very well with the group, and I never thought I would leave. But I had the opportunity, thanks to Google, to be in the auto retail space for, you know, the 9 years leading that division. I got to build a business from scratch that was so fun and exciting. And candidly, I really wanted to put into practice what we were preaching. You know, I say we took dealers along a journey. And when I say we, it's not just us or my team or Google. I think the industry took dealers along a journey from 2011 to 2019 that was three-phased. It was, first of all, what is digital? Like, I don't even know what SEM means. What is display advertising? What is this? Is this internet thing isn't a fad, so we better figure it out. What does it mean, right? And then it was why digital? Okay, you've explained to me what SEM is, but why should I prioritize that or a Facebook ad over the TV I'm doing? What is the benefit there? And then we got into the how piece. Okay, I get it. You don't tell me what it is. Don't tell me why it's important. I get it. But how do I do it better? What should I be asking my partner? How can I get more out of my media investment? Is there more incremental opportunity? Those are the questions we got to. And the short version is, despite my best efforts within the walls of Google, we weren't seeing a ton of headway being made in the how piece. And I, you know, don't want to be catty and speak to terms of, you know, what I saw or who was doing good or bad. But overall, I thought there was a lot of opportunity to do it better than what we were seeing today. I was fortunate to just join my former teammates at Google. Our two founders, Andrew Diffendorfer and Tim Mueller, were part of our retail team. Our COO, Ashley Lebchek, created Google's dealer guidebook. They left the company and started a company and were nice enough to come to me afterwards and say, what do you think about this opportunity? I was curious what they're up to. And they said, well, what do you think about it? And it gave me an opportunity to practice what we preach. What we're trying to do in its simplest forms is a lot of what I spoke to today. You know, we want to allow dealers to go direct to partners like Google, Facebook, and Bing for all the reasons I already mentioned. We want them to have full transparency, to own their data, to own their account. We're charge a technology fee. We have a tech platform that allows them to activate their paid advertising strategies, but we don't take margin on their media. So we always tell you what incremental opportunity exists. It might tell them to do more of this Facebook advertising or this YouTube advertising, but it's no benefit to us. It's a flat fee for us, and however much they spend on their marketing goes to it. And they get full access to it. We give them the opportunity to snort if they want. They get an executive view of the revenue, the performance, or they can deep dive right into the accounts and change things if they want to. But we're 100% aligned to those companies' best practices. We encourage them to activate across every profit center because it works together really well. So all of our dealers activate on used, service, and new. And, you know, we do VIN level creative on video, which is often very hard to do, as well as, you know, text ads or display ads if necessary. And we're just trying to do things the right way. We're, you know, working with partners who might see the world similarly, that you don't have to be everywhere today. Again, marketing's not as complicated as it once was. We're going to continue to evolve. We're going to continue to hold those partners accountable to make sure they perform. If they don't, we'll look to pivot. But that's sort of our stick right now. And I'm just passionate about the space and the you're offering the time for us to be on here. If people want to get in touch with us, they can. If it's okay to give that information out. Otherwise,
yeah, please. Yeah, we're going to put it in the show notes too, folks. So yeah, go there. Okay.
You're welcome to email me at peter@foundationdirect.com or info@foundationdirect.com. We'll get back to you. Happy to just take general questions. We're passionate about this industry, if you haven't been able to tell. Yeah. We just appreciate more than anything the ability to have these conversations with people like yourself, Herb, and try to make a difference. And that's really what we're trying to push forward.
Right on, man. No, dude, thank you so much for the time. This has been amazing. I loved it. Thanks for sharing with the industry, man. That's awesome. There is one question that I ask everybody that comes on the show. That question is, where do you see the automotive industry headed in the next 5 years and why?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Mass adoption. I mean, we're going to put COVID on the back burner for now, I think, because maybe that changes things dramatically. I follow it from the consumer lens more than anything. So I think I'm going to probably maybe give unpopular rationale, but I see and agree with the pundits who think consolidation will only continue. Consolidation of dealerships, maybe OEMs, et cetera. Because I just think the more we follow what the customer wants, which is they want anyone they interact with. You know, our dealerships are on the same platform now and expectations as they get with Amazon as a customer. Yeah. They want, how can you save me time? How can you leverage technology to interact with me so I don't have to, you know, interact in the old ways? And how can you create transparency into this, into the car buying process, into, you know, what I can expect in terms of the shopping experience and so forth? And I'm really bullish on, you know, the digital retailing piece, and the people who evolve quickly will be the ones who survive, and the ones that don't just won't, there won't be a need for their businesses as aggressively as what we have today. I think you're going to see less dealerships. Obviously the OEMs are changing their models and you're seeing different, you know, mobility patterns and whatnot. But I think dealers are going to have to really evolve to more of Apple Store kind of activities and less necessary inventory always on the lot than what we're seeing today, and just really adopt this digital retailing perspective. But yeah, it's going to be full of disruption and it's going to be a lot of fun. But I think that the change is going to only accelerate from here.
Yeah, no, dude, I love it. And I totally agree with you. I'm excited, dude, to be, you know, I know this may sound cheesy or whatever, but I don't care. I'm excited to be a part of the industry in this moment more than ever, because things are changing so quickly, so rapidly, and it's an evolution, you know what I mean? And it's just fun to see, to be a part of it in some way, shape, or form. So,
well, you asked me what I learned from Google, and maybe I'll end on this one as well. But, you know, one of the other things that comes to mind as you were talking is, you know, embrace change. I mean, we saw the rapid growth of that company, you know, from its infancy to it's now 20 some years old, but it evolved every day and we embraced it and it was uncomfortable. But I think the more we embrace the change and are able to pivot our business, the better off we'll be. And again, this pandemic is no better example. The dealers who were ready in terms of the digital retailing are, I think everybody's hurting a little bit here. I don't want to minimize that, but they're definitely suffering less. They're able to pivot more quickly, and the other ones are really, really tough. So I think the theme here is, ask yourself every day, what am I changing? What am I doing different than yesterday? And if the answer is nothing, that's a problem. I think we all have to get comfortable with just, what are we doing differently today?
I love that, man. Peter Leto, everybody. Dude, thank you so much for doing this. Really, really appreciate it. I'm super stoked to get this out, to share with people. Thanks again, dude. That's all the time we have today, folks. If you like the session, if you like this podcast, please share it with your friends or people at the dealership so that they can take this information and implement it in their day-to-day. Thank you so much. That's all the time we have. And as usual, we'll talk later. Thanks for making time for the Dealer Talk Podcast.